This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to Bud the Pod.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of What the Puck. It is a Washington Capitals podcast, which means it's a podcast about your 2018 Stanley Cup champions. Thank you all for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube. Well, the Caps are ready for the All-Star break. I think the entire team is due for that break, even though January has not been good to them. We got to talk all about it. And normally I say, joining me as always, we got Coach Dan. However, that is not true this week. Coach Dan, he is not here at the moment. He's unavailable this week. He's a very busy guy. I'll let him tell you guys what's going on in his life next week. I'm not going to break that news. But joining me as always, he is a past guest of What the Puck. He's the play-by-play and sometimes color commentator for the Guelph Storm in the OHL. He's a huge Caps fan. He's joined us for the What the Puckies each year the last couple years. He's a good friend of ours, Ryan Drury. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's great to be back on the show with you, Brandon. I feel like it's been a while since we've chatted, probably since the last What the Puckies. So yeah, it's great to be on the show. Miss not seeing Dan here, but I'm sure we'll be okay without him for 1 week.
I mean, I hope so. He does hold down the fort by himself, so he does have that leg up on me. You know, he was like, "Oh, just do the show yourself this week," and I'm like, "No, I'm not doing that. You can do that. I got friends." So, you know, I'm sorry, Dan. He's listening to this being like, what a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. No, Dan's our friend, I guess.
Yeah. Dan's a good guy. We like to give him some
crap. He is. Dan's the best.
Yeah. So let's jump right into this, man. Let's talk a little bit about it. Unfortunately, COVID, the bug, has decided to get the entire Caps team at this point. Alexander Ovechkin was the last one. He was the last holdout. And on Wednesday, it's announced that he tests positive. He's out for the game against the Oilers. And now he's going to be out for the All-Star game. Hopefully, best wishes go out to Ovi and his family. Hopefully, it's not a terrible case of COVID. But I think we kind of saw in that Edmonton game, without Ovechkin on the ice, I mean, that is a huge blow to the Capitals. What did you think of a Ovechkin-less Capital team up against Edmonton?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that we can probably count ourselves lucky that he has not missed a game up until the other day against the Oilers, because if you look at his contributions to this team, I believe he's got 22% of the team's goals.
That's true.
Which is not, you know, an outrageous thing most years to say about Ovi, but you'd probably like that to be somewhere around 15 or 16%. Now, that's neither here nor there, because it doesn't really matter how many goals that they score. And, you know, they managed to come roaring back against Edmonton the other night. Really doesn't matter, because this team just can't play defense. And without him, they're without the heart and soul of not only the team this year, but the franchise in general. And you could see it. I mean, the intensity dropped off without him out there on this. I mean, I don't even know what else to say about this power play. It's not a power play. There's no power involved. But not having him last night on that power play, definitely it showed a weakness, a further weakness in the team's ability to really generate anything. He's the only one that ever seems to do anything on the power play, because it's that bad. I thought that it was an awful start, one of the worst starts of the year, coming off of a pretty all-around decent effort against Pittsburgh, the hated rival, to come back and get that one in overtime after some tribulations with the refs and the video review room. Yeah, I just thought it. I just thought they lacked detail, which I could basically say about their game the entire year from puck drop opening night. They lack detail. They don't know how to defend. They're lazy at times with their back checking. I have a lot of issues with the way ice time is being distributed, And, you know, at the end of the day, as much as I love Ilya Samsonov and still think that he is going to develop into a great goalie, because let's be honest here, he's 23 years old, might be 24 now. And I love VV. Like, Vanecek is just a grinder. The goaltending's not good. It just isn't. Like, as much as I like the two guys and think they both have bright futures because they're young, the goaltending's just not good. When you combine that with the fact that they lack so much detail in the way that they try and play hockey, you get things like last night. And it's been frustrating. The first half of this season has probably been the most frustrating experience I've had watching them since Adam Oates. I'm so frustrated with how the team plays.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because it's almost like this Jekyll and Hyde team. You really don't know who's going to show up, and it changes day by day. And maybe that is because of, you know, the lines being jumbled up from COVID and injuries. I mean, how long has TJ Oshie been out at this point? But it's crazy to see. Like you said, that game against Pittsburgh, I thought was one of their better games of the season. I was like, all right, maybe they're turning a corner. Maybe, you know, going up against Holpe on Friday is kind of like reignited something, and they're going to keep climbing this hill, and they've finally figured out what's working. And then they just lay this goose egg against Edmonton on national television, on TNT, a wide audience against Edmonton, who they're struggling themselves. It doesn't make any sense to me. The power play, like you said, is definitely lacking. Defense is really shocking, though, because Peter Laviolette, whenever he's gone anywhere, people always say he gets there, he improves the defense first and foremost, and then, you know, when he's let go, they're better defense because he was there. So it's odd to me that the defense is not working out very well. The goaltending, I've always been a big fan of Vitek Vanecek ever since his South Carolina days. I always thought that he could definitely bring something, but Samsonov this season is just very surprising. I'm going to admit, I missed the first 5 minutes of that game against Edmonton on Wednesday, and I was like, you know what? I'm sick of watching the pregame. I'm going to flip to something else. I'll get back to it in a little bit. What am I going to miss in the first 5 minutes? And then I flip back and I'm like, that can't be right. That's got to be like a replay from a past game. 3-0. I haven't been gone that long. What happened? And then you find out Phoenix Copley was put in. He hasn't been in the NHL for 3 years. This is his first game in 3 years at the NHL level. I don't know. This team, even though Laviolette has like one of the best winning percentages since he has been a coach in whatever, how many games, I think he just passed 100 as the Caps coach, they're not impressive. You're kind of confused of who's going to show up what night. They seem uninspired. I don't know. It seems like a team that's just kind of going through the motions each day.
I agree. I mean, that's how it looks. And, you know, I don't want to turn this into a crap fest on Peter Laviolette. I think Lavi's a good coach. I just think that he's even a little lost right now. And you know what? There are valid points to be made for saying the team's been extremely injured. They have been. They've had top players out all year long. TJ Oshie played, what, 9 games?
I think that's it, yeah.
If that, I mean, I'm just throwing that off the top of my head. I don't think he's played double digits. Like, that poor guy who is a rock on this team, you know, hasn't played. Backstrom, we just got him back. He's played, what, 13 games now, and you see how effective he is when he's in the lineup.
He's definitely slow right now. He's working his way back. He's not like the backy of old. It's going to take him some time. I mean, he had a hip surgery, so I mean, it's going to take him some time to get back at where he was.
It's and what an awful surgery for a guy like that to have, because I know that he's maybe not the first guy people think of when you bring up the word physical, but he is physical in a way that doesn't always show up on highlight reels. He is a gritty player. He reminds me a little bit of the way Forsberg used to play. That's Peter, not that other guy that we don't like to talk about. But he, like, you know, throwing the reverse check. I mean, he pushes guys off. He's so good. at holding on to pucks. And for him to have hip surgery and have that type of discomfort in an area of the body that he really literally and figuratively leans on to play his game,
right,
is tough. And I mean, it shows just how, all time of a player he is, that he's still almost a point per game player in the games he's come back from. But yeah, I mean, you could look up and down. Nick Jensen, Kempney just starting to come back, Carlson out for a while with COVID, Backe and Oshie. Like, you could look up and down and say, yeah, they've had plenty of injuries. It's not an excuse for the lack of detail, though, because the other guys that go in there are in the NHL for a reason. This coaching staff should be able to get more out of this group, because even at times when they've missed some of or all those guys I just mentioned, there's still enough talent on this team to be doing and playing a lot better. I don't expect them to score 6 or 7 goals. This isn't the Rock the Red 2010-11 Capitals team. I understand that. But for God's sake, can somebody just screw their head on straight and take a check, block a passing lane, back check properly? I mean, my God, like and you can pick on the goalies, and I think ultimately it's a little unfair. I thought Sammy let in two of the three goals that ended up getting him pulled were pretty soft. Ones that generally you would like an upper echelon starting goaltender, which he isn't yet, and I think could still be, you would like them to save those. You would expect Vasilevsky or Shesterkin or Jack Campbell, you'd expect them to stop those. But that being said, it really doesn't matter how well the goaltenders play if the team is so sloppy in front of them. And they really have been all year. Like, I don't feel like, Brandon, they've found a consistent identity or way to play. It's
right.
Pretty much been Ovi. And if he's electric, they'll win. It's very, very rare. And I say that with all due respect to Kuznetsov, who has really bounced back. It's rare that they'll win when Ovi isn't cooking. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
We do have to give it to Kuznetsov. I mean, at the end of that,
he's been great.
Yeah, that Boston Bruins series, Coach Dan and I were like, all right, who can we get if we trade this guy away? His value's down, but we can get somebody. So we already had him off the team at June at that point.
I agree. I agreed.
Yeah.
I was so fed up with him.
Yeah, but he's really shown up. He's changed his game. He's an all-star right now. So, I mean, we got to give it up to Kuznetsov. He's definitely proven he's like the number two of this team. And I'm sure the fact that Ovi and him are both Russian kind of helps. They can kind of communicate a little bit better than the rest of the team. But I got to give it to him. He's done absolutely fantastic. Now, switching the gears, talking about Ovechkin here. He missed the Oilers game because of COVID. Because of this, he's going to be missing out on the All-Star game. So taking his place for the Washington Capitals is Tom Wilson. Willie Baby is now an all-star. I don't know if you saw the picture or not. Him and Kuzi are on the private jet flying to Vegas right now.
Yes.
How hysterical is it that Tom Wilson will be at the all-star game? Like, when that got announced, I have a feeling hockey Twitter like just lost their minds, because we know how hated this guy is unless you're a Capitals fan.
I just think it's so funny. It's just the texts I got from friends of mine up here in the Great White North, just incensed. And I love it. I'm here to drink the tears. I think it's great. Is he an all-star? Let's be perfectly honest. No. But they have this goofy rule where they got to have a representative from every team, which is a joke. That's not how all-stars work or should work. But good for him. He gets to go. Like, he's played very, very well. Like, you could argue the third best Capital of the season. Like, he has been awesome.
Yeah,
and he's been laying big, clean hits. The one in Boston there on Anton Bleed, like, that was just as crisp of a body check as you're going to see. And I'm glad that he laid that hit, because it's showing people that he can be the guy out there that's the physical presence without doing something stupid and knocking a guy's block off. And he's scoring big goals.
Mm-hmm.
He scored an overtime goal. He's scored on the power play. Like, this guy's a versatile weapon. Ideally, is he an all-star basically any given year? No. He's a very, very good player, but he's not an all-star. But it's great that he's going to be able to go. It's cool for him, and it's just really, really funny for us to watch people lose their mind over it. I would compare it to, and I wasn't even born when this happened, I think it was the 90 all-star game, and Mike Milbury brought Chris Nyland. And people lost their minds, so mad, because I believe it was 89 or 90 because Nyland had left the Canadiens by then and was back home playing in Boston. And Nyland, to be fair, was kind of like what Wilson is now. Like, he was having a career year. I think he scored 22 that season. Like, he had a great year. And Mike Milbury, being Mike Milbury, thought, you know, I'm going to take my guy and make a statement here, because back then the coaches picked the teams. The coaches were able to pick some of the players. I don't know about the whole team, but some of them. And I remember him, you know, you can look up articles. He was getting destroyed by people for bringing Chris Nyland. So it's similar and it's funny. And I'm happy for Willie. Like, he, you know, he's our guy. He's done some dumb stuff. But, you know, if people can get over what Brad Marchand has done for 10 years.
Right.
I think that they can, you know, I think more and more people are starting to appreciate how actually versatile and good he is outside of, you know, how much people hate him.
Yeah. I mean, he can throw the haymakers, but he can also, he showed this year, I think it was December 10th was his first fighting major of the season, and it's the only one he's had so far. So, I mean, it shows he can lay in the punches, he can lay in the hits, but he can also score goals. And when Backy's been out, when Oshie's been out, he's the one that got the A. I mean, a couple shows ago, Dan was saying, who do you think's going to get the C when Ovechkin leaves? My first guess was Tom Wilson. I really do see him as a captain. Yeah, absolutely. I think I think he rallies the troops. I think he gets people going. I think he's just a face of this franchise that everybody can talk about. And when all that hoopla went around with the Rangers and New York last year, I mean, everybody was saying the guy needs to go. You need to fire him. He needs to go play in, you know, some minor league or whatever. I said, if the Capitals were to let him go because of that, you know how quick any other team would pick him up?
It's every insane. Team.
Every single team would be picking him up. He wouldn't go anywhere.
He would be in a luxury suite at a hotel. He'd be in a luxury suite in the top floor of the Bellagio with all 31 other GMs lined up for a 24-hour sitting to try and talk to him. And that's the including James Dolan, that moron that owns the Rangers and MSG and the Knicks. He's one of the biggest losers in pro sports history. I mean, just look at the on ice and on court product that he's provided New York fans for 25, 30 years. He's a loser. And I'll say it again. And I said it on our show. I mean, that statement that he put out. I mean, they did it under the guise of the team that Jimmy D had to put out is one of, if not the most embarrassing. I don't want to say overall, because we'll get to something later that's more embarrassing PR wise, but within the realm of competition, it is the most embarrassing press release in sports history. I can't even think of anything that comes close. Like, to have that statement. And then, and no disrespect to this guy, sign Ryan Reeves, is absolutely hilarious to me. So, yeah, when it comes to Tom, I think that people, you know, he's the guy, it's the old adage, you hate that he is playing against you. But I've said it to all my friends who are Leaf fans, and they all agree up here in Canada, Toronto boy. Like, the Leaf fans, man, Leaf fans love their lunch pail guys. I remember when I was a kid, like, Ty Domi, Darcy Tucker, like, they were selling just as many jerseys as the Matt Sundins of the world, Curtis Josephs. There were equally as many Domi jerseys. And if Tom Wilson played for his hometown Maple Leafs, he would be the number one selling jersey in the city. Like, guaranteed.
I think they'd build him a statue.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. And that's saying something with, guys like Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette marching around the city, Scotty Barnes with the Raptors. I think Tom Wilson would be the most popular athlete in Toronto, bar none, if he played for the Leafs. Like, yeah. The second that someone took a run at Austin Matthews and Wilson fought them, there would be a backlog of jersey orders. The stitching guy would be like getting bloody knuckles from stitching Wilson jerseys. They wouldn't be able to handle the demand. So that's my thoughts on Tom. He's a great player. He's shown that he is a great player and is more than just a guy who's a meathead throwing knuckles around. He is so, so much more. Thank God we have him in Washington.
Absolutely. I'm so happy. I've got a Tom Wilson jersey. I wear that thing with pride, so I'm fine with him being here. Absolutely. Maybe I'll wear that for the All-Star game on Saturday. Maybe that's what I'll do. But exactly. So we talked a little bit about the power play. Let's circle back to that. You know, we're talking about how terrible it is and how it's not a power play. What do you think this team has to do to improve the power play? Do we have to trade and get somebody else here? Is it the coaching? What do you think it is?
Well, the coaching would be the first thing I point to. And I mean, God bless the guy, and he was part of the staff that won the cup, but I like, the numbers just don't lie. Like, that's the nice thing about sports, is there are a lot of numbers to back up an argument, and the numbers just don't lie. This power play under Blaine Forsythe, since we won the Stanley Cup almost 4 or 5 years ago now, has declined every single season. They've gotten worse. And it's bizarre to me. And in the realm of talking about the power play, I don't want to hear about Nick Backstrom was hurt and Oshie's hurt. There are lots of guys on this team that, A, can move the puck and have great shots. So a few things tie into this. They need to change the way that they set up the power play. They've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now with the umbrella setup, with the bumper guy in the slot. Right. I don't care if you keep him there, but everybody stays completely still and just moves. The main setup guy, usually Kuznetsov this year, just wanders up and down the far half wall. There's no one over here except Ovechkin. So if he's over to the left side, no one else is there. You got Carlson up top, who is just off. Like, he's bobbling pucks. If Orlov's out there, you never know when he's going to turn it over. What I really think they should do is have two guys a little more up high so that they have, you know, a bit of a make weight defensively for when they turn it over, because the shorthanded goals are getting out of control. That's what sunk them against Edmonton. I mean, to give up a shorthanded goal like that to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with not much time left in the game after a great comeback, and that's what kills you, is the thing that's supposed to, in the very least, give you a bit of momentum and not let the other team score. It's a joke. And I just feel like they need to shift the shape. This slingshot business, this has got to stop.
That's been around forever with this team.
At all levels of hockey. I think that you should lose the power play if you move the puck backwards in the neutral zone. It's so lame. Like, you're in the NHL. You're killing time for the other. First of all, you're doing two things. You're wasting time by passing it backwards. And also, when you pass it backwards, you're allowing the other team to get more set up along the line. So now, basically, almost every single power play where they don't win the faceoff, which they lose a lot of faceoffs. Yeah. So now they got to go get the puck, pass it backwards, and get to the blue line, and the team just stacks three guys there. So now you can't carry it over the line, so you got to chip it in. And then if you don't win the race, they just clear the puck again. And on the rare occasion that they do get set up in the zone, the four guys that are out there and the goalie, most importantly, know where everybody is. That guy's never going to move from over there. Ovi's over there. Carlson's up high. Kuznetsov's going to be over here. And then there's going to be someone tight to the net, usually ideally an Oshie. And then Wilson or Oshie are interchanging right there in the bumper. I mean, like, I just broke down the entirety of the power play, and everybody, you think that I'm smarter than NHL coaches? Everybody else know. If I know, I can tell you they know.
Right.
Like, the NHL coaches aren't calling me going, how would you stop the Caps power play, Ryan? Like, I can see it, and so can they. And so they don't score. For this team to be what I think we're now 31st, for this team to be in the bottom half of the league in power play is embarrassing. For them to be 30th?
Yeah.
How is someone not being fired over this? And far be it for me to call for people's jobs, but this, Brandon, you know this. You host a football podcast too. Like, this is a results-based business. If you don't have good numbers, I'm not asking for number one, but if you can't take a team that has at least Carlson, Kuznetsov, Wilson, Ovechkin, Eller, McMichael, anybody out there, you can't be better than 30th with that? I'm sorry. I just don't know how to defend what Blaine Forsythe is in charge of. And it's the old adage, it's way easier to get rid of a coach, let alone an assistant coach, than five players. And the players have to wear some of this too. They're not scoring.
Sure. Yeah.
But they are coached to set up the power play this way. And this way is bad. So something's got to change. And I don't understand how it hasn't already. But that's just me.
The power play has been like this for a couple years now. It's definitely not something new with Laviolette. So this has been an issue for a while, but it seems like it has just gotten worse and worse and worse. And like you said, there's too much talent on the ice during a power play for them not to get goals. And I mean, it was a shorthanded goal during the power play. What was it? Was it just last night against Edmonton?
Yeah, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Is that what sealed it for the Caps?
It's a joke.
Yeah.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, hey, good player. I like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, former first overall pick. Good Western Canadian boy. He walks down the ice uncontested off a brutal turnover. And do you know why that turnover happened? Because he knew exactly where all the guys on the ice were. And so he bit on a passing lane and took a chance and ended up being in great shape to scream all the way down the ice in full. Like, he took that puck in full stride and was gone. Gone. And it's just brutal. I saw this today. Japers Rink tweeted this out. The Caps have the worst goaltending and worst special teams number of all playoff-bound teams in the Eastern Conference. That's so... how is that possible? Is that possible? We have the best power play goal score literally ever, and we can't knock a puck in off a guy's ass. They can't even get lucky and just fart one in. It's embarrassing that we're talking about the power play in Washington being this bad. Remember that, and I don't want to say the good old days. They were fun, but like anything pre-cup is sad times. But remember like the Red, when the Caps got a power play, Ovi, Backstrom, Green, Semin, it was automatic. Like, they were... Yeah. That one year, the year that they won the President's Trophy and Montreal beat them, I'm sorry to bring that up. I think at the Christmas break that year, they were at, like, 42%. And I think they finished somewhere around 28. But, like, they were humming. It was almost one in two power plays they scored on. Like, they couldn't not score. It was unbelievable. They would almost get bored when they got power plays and just like goof around because they scored two or three already. And they can't figure out how to do that now?
Do you think that they need a little bit of young blood, some of that Hershey talent that we have seen so much this year, to kind of get invested more into the power play? Maybe not have some of these older guys out there?
How could it be any worse? How could it be any worse? Like, I really, and this ties into something that's bothered me about the coaching as well, and this falls solely on Lavi. I don't understand what the point of Connor McMichael being here is anymore on this team. And it's not because I don't want him here. I would prefer him here. I actually think he should be on the second line. But I don't understand what the point of having him here is. A 20-year-old kid with all that talent, lethal shooter. I watched him a lot in the OHL, man, and I know that's a junior league. Lethal shot. And you can't find some room for him on the 30th ranked power play to maybe set him up to try and have a crack at it?
Yeah.
I just don't understand what the point is of having him here playing 9 minutes, 8 minutes, 21 seconds, 11 minutes. I don't understand what the point of that is. And, you know, the other night against Edmonton, like, they're trailing 3-0, and Carl Hagelin is out there like every other shift.
What is he doing there? Why? Well,
I think Carl Hagelin, like, tries hard. And that's it. That's as nice a thing as I can say about him, because I respect him. He's won Stanley Cups. He's been part of winning groups. He's a good penalty killer. He skates well. Other than that, I legitimately don't know when his contract is up, how he's going to find another NHL team. And I say that with all due respect. I'm not an athlete, but I watch him play, and I know a lot of people in the game. I just really don't know what the value is of having a guy out there that literally cannot generate anything over this kid who's got a supreme shot, great shot. McMichael's got a nasty release, and he's got young legs. He can skate well. He can forecheck well. I just don't know the point of having guys like him and Snively and Leeson and Alexi Protas playing 8-9 minutes a night. I don't know what for. Half the time we're trailing, and we've got Carl Hagelin and Garnet Hathaway out there. How many times in overtime? What's our record in overtime now? 2-8, 2-7, something like that.
Terrible.
How often do they start with Eller, Hathaway, Orlov? Or some wonky threesome like that?
Right.
This is overtime. There's more ice than ever. Would you generally not want your best players out there? And if the thinking is, we respect the effort these veteran guys put out tonight. I'm not saying I don't like Garnet Hathaway. I think he brings a lot to the team. I'm not saying I don't like Carl Hagelin. I think he tries hard, like I said. But that doesn't win you games, especially in overtime when there's more ice. I want Carlson out there for like 2.5 minutes to start overtime. I want Ovechkin automatically. I don't care if he's played 35 minutes. I want him automatically on the ice for overtime. I want Backstrom or Kuznetsov. At worst, Wilson. And if you're going to play a guy like Hagelin or Hathaway to start overtime, why is McMichael not able to do that? I don't understand it. I would love to have a coffee with Peter Laviolette and have him just explain to me what else the thinking could be other than, well, they played really well tonight, so we're going to reward them with, well, I'm sorry. Hey, you're a big football fan. When the Ravens are driving for a game-winning drive, they don't pull Lamar Jackson and put the backup in because he was a really good guy at practice that week.
Right.
And we gotta reward him. Your best players go out there to score, okay? That's the way it's always worked in sports. They didn't pull MJ off the floor in the playoffs and go, well, Steve Kerr, who, you know, was a good player, we got to have him out there because Steve is just such a grinder. I don't want grinders when we're trying to win. I want the stars. I want them to score. They're the best at it. I don't know if you knew. Like, the stats don't lie. So it really ticks me off and sends me on tangents like this when overtime comes and Carl Hagelin's out there. Why? What for?
Right.
I don't know.
I'm right there with you. I don't know. I kind of think getting some of this young blood involved a little bit more. I liked seeing a lot of these Hershey Bears come up, and I've liked some of the work that they've put in. Now, of course, they need more seasoning, and I think that's what that's why you give them more ice time. But like you said, Connor McMichael, that guy, he's got a lot of promise. A lot of promise, but he's got to be on the ice. Give him some shots on the power play. Give him some shots in OT. Let's see what he can do.
Why can't he? Why can't he be out there? Like, what? How is having Carl Hagelin out there more effective than him? You know, I get it. All young, they, you know, they're not totally locked in on details and playing against men and the strength thing. Yeah, I understand. But I'm not looking for strength in overtime. I'm looking for skill. And on the power play, we're desperately looking for skill. There's plenty of big guys out there already. Why? Was Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, other than slapping Mark Stahl a couple times, was Alex Semin ever, like, a big, strong guy? He was out there on the power play? Like, what? I don't understand the, you know, just wasting a bench spot. Just have all veteran guys, if that's your mentality, and let McMichael play 25 minutes in Hershey. I think he's good enough to be in the NHL right now. But if you're just going to play him for 9 minutes every night, I mean, let him score 25 in Hershey and dominate that league and get stronger, whatever your excuse is. I don't have a lot of time for it. And I just think that, you know, I think a trade's going to happen. It should be said, too, that not having Anthony Mantha basically all year has hurt. Like, he was a big acquisition. They gave up a hell of a good young player in Jake Varana to get him. And he has not played really at all. And I don't know if we'll see him, you know, before March.
Yeah.
So
I'm thinking earliest we'll see him is late April on the ice. Because they're saying, like, I think this week it was, well, he might just start skating at this point. Like, he's not on the ice at all right now.
Yeah, he had a significant lower body surgery as well. So, like, yeah, but again, even without him in the lineup, you've still got a hell of a lot of good players out there, and to be chugging along at 30th on the power play, it's just unacceptable. And I know there's rumors and, you know, whispers about Marc-Andre Fleury and whatnot. I don't know. I don't even know if he'd come here, but
I mean, he pretty much said that he was loyal to Pittsburgh, even though he's in Chicago right now, that he would not want to play for the Washington Capitals, which I think is, again, hilarious that, you know, you're still that loyal after that team has let you go so many years ago. But
did he not watch Tom Brady the last 2 years? Like, I mean, I understand being loyal, but, like, you know, I want to win.
Yeah. I don't know. He's got other things on his mind, I guess. But we brought up Marc-Andre Fleury. Let's bring up another goaltender, former Capital Braden Holtby. Caps went up against Holtby for the very first time since he left. I mean, it's been almost 2 years since Holtby saw any of the guys, you know, due to COVID and everything like that. It was the first time that Holtby had been up against the team. Not a great showing for Braden Holtby. The Caps were able to get 5 goals on him. Not a great showing. There was a lot of talk of, well, we're going to bring in a veteran goaltender since these young guys aren't really working out. Wonder if Holtby's available. He'd probably be $2 million. We could probably bring him back for that. After that showing in Dallas, I don't know. I think a lot of fans are kind of going, you know what? We had a good time with Holtby in 2018. I think we can just leave the memories alone. Let him stay in Dallas. Don't bring him back here, because that showing was not good at all. It definitely showed some of the weaknesses Holtby had while he was here in Washington. He still kind of got them even 2 years removed.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, the first thing I would say to that is it's one game, which is the obvious thing to say. The second thing I would say to that is, let's recall a conversation that I actually had with you guys on this show in, I want to say, February of 2018. And what was everybody saying? Holtby can't start in the playoffs. Philip Grubauer is going to be the guy. If this is the year, it's going to have to be him. And I said to you guys, and you can go back, all the fans in the show catalog, and find it. I said, everybody needs to calm down. If the Capitals go anywhere, it will be on the back of 70. And what did he do? Like, he's absolutely not, no goaltender's perfect.
Sure.
You know, and he is still completely capable of being a starter. And I know people will roll their eyes at that, but look at the teams that he's been on since he left. A very patchwork Vancouver team.
Sure.
A very patchwork Vancouver team that still can't really, you know, knuckle down when they have to. They've had a nice run with old Brucey there, and I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for my cousin who's having a good time riding shotgun with Bruce. But Then you go to Dallas, and coming off that cup appearance a couple years ago, they are extremely sloppy defensively, too. They're old. They're injured. Jamie Benn looks like he can't even skate straight anymore. Tyler Seguin, who I've always liked, you know, has had a lot of injury problems derailing his career. That D-Cor, I mean, John Klingberg wants nothing to do with it. He wants out. They've got some okay young players. I think Haskinen's one of the best defenders in the league. But outside of that, you look at the rest of that team in front of him, and what do you have? And his numbers are actually pretty good. Like, he's a 913 goalie right now on a pretty average to mediocre-ish defensive team in front of him. And I actually would rather them pay way less, and you could probably have the Stars retain salary on the remaining year on his deal, and send them, what, a fourth-round pick and maybe an okay C-minus prospect to bring back the guy that was, no one was more comfortable in the cap's crease than 70. I would rather them do that than pay a bunch of draft capital up in the third, second, first round for a Marc-Andre Fleury. And, I mean, if Chicago knows what they're doing, which, I mean, let's be honest.
I don't think they do.
That organization doesn't on many levels. If they didn't get a first-round pick at least for Marc-Andre Fleury, they're out of their minds. This guy won the Vezina last year. But I don't really want the Capitals to pay something like that when, as much as I'm excited about young guys like McMichael and Protas, and I would like to shout out Marty Fairvari. He's been great.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
A real bright spot on the team. Like, the Caps, one thing you can say about the Caps is, like, they can find good young defensemen and bleed them into the lineup. Like, Fairvari's been chef's kit. I've been so impressed with the kid. I would rather them keep their upper echelon draft capital and start to rebuild and get some more good young prospects then, you know, and get Holtby rather than pay out the rear end to bring Fleury in and have him basically essentially already say, I don't really want to be here. Whereas if you brought Holtby back, like, he'd be ecstatic. He just bought another house. I shouldn't say here, I'm in Ontario, but he just bought a house, another house in D.C. with a turtle aquarium, you know?
Like, absolutely.
I think he'd be fired up to come back. And I'd welcome him back with open arms because, based off what we said with the rookies being in the lineup instead of guys like Hagelin sometimes, how could what Braden Holtby is doing be worse than what we've seen from Samsonov and, at times, Vanacek, who largely, I think, has outplayed Samsonov. And even Vanacek has not been that good.
Yeah.
What's he, an .898 save percentage now? Not that good. How is Holtby worse? I would happily pay a fourth round pick and a decent prospect to bring that guy back. Absolutely.
I mean, I'd love to see Braden Holtby back, and like you said, I'd like to see maybe something he could rub off onto Double V, VTech. You know, I think that VTech, those two guys really had a lot of the same path to the NHL. Both of them were in South Carolina for a good chunk of time. Both of them were in Hershey for a good chunk of time, and Holtby, he just kind of had to wait. Remember, there was the lockout. He had to go down to South Carolina even more, which ticked him off. Because he knew he was better than that. He knew he was better than that. He's like, I don't belong in the ECHL. I should be, you know, one of the top guys, but now I have to wait because of this stupid lockout going on. So I think that both of those guys, VTech and Holtby, could relate to each other, and, you know, Holtby could pass on some knowledge to VTech, make him an even better goaltender than he already is. Sammy, I don't know how to fix that guy. Like, you were always talking about Samsonov when he was in the KHL. This amazing prospect that we were going to have, and he was going to take over after Holtby, and I think the Caps thought the same thing. But he got to the NHL level, and he just seems to have faltered. He seems like he's stagnant right now. He doesn't know how to get to that next drive. So I don't know what to do with the goalie situation, but if the Capitals want to make it into the playoffs, and not just get into the playoffs, but go far, they can't take both these guys in goal. It has to be one or the other, and it has to be, I think, a veteran brought in at some point to help kind of lead the way, because these two guys, they're just not cutting it.
I completely agree. I'll say it again. Like, the numbers just don't lie. And as much as you believe in the potential and the ceiling that's very much still there with both these guys. I still think Samsonov has high-end NHL starter potential. He's so young. And I think the same thing of Vanecek to a lesser degree. They're very different goalies. Vanecek is a lot more, you know, quiet and economical with his movement. Samsonov is capable of those jaw-dropping that kick save he made in Pittsburgh was like that's a good little glimpse at what he can do. That's the thing about Samsonov that's so frustrating. He can make those you have no business stopping that saves. He has a lot of trouble settling himself down. It's almost like he's like dancing out of his body sometimes. Like he can't just settle and be calm in the net. It's right. Always explosive with him. It's fireworks when he's on. He can't seem to just, you know, get himself into that Zen, you know, Carey Price-esque approach where he can just quietly turn shots away and he lets one or two in but makes 30 saves and you barely notice him all night. Generally, when he wins games, he's made two or three diving incredible saves where, you know, if the right goalie coach, and I mean, geez, we talk a lot about Trotz and them not re-signing him. Like, letting Mitch Korn go is just...
That was massive. That might have been bigger than Trotz, to be honest.
I have a hard time disagreeing with that sentiment, Brandon, because Mitch Korn, like, he, outside of, I don't even know, the Briers of the world, I think he might be the greatest goalie coach of all time. Like, look at the guys he's worked with. Like, that was Hasek's guy, you know, that, like, he worked with, you know, Belfour and the like, dude, this guy, look what he did for years with Pecorine, like completely transformed that guy's game. Cause he's very, the same. Like Pecorine was very similar to what I see in Samsonov now. Explosive, like almost overly athletic, flying around, diving across the crease to make a blocker save. And Mitch Korn, and look what he did with Holtby, like settled him down. He made Braden Holtby and Philip Grubauer. Mitch Korn earned Philip Grubauer a lot of money. Like, let's just, you know, call a spade a spade. Yeah, losing him was just giant. But I think I still am willing to be patient with a goalie like that because goaltending is just such a crapshoot. And with what he showed as a kid playing against men in the KHL, he was a freak over there. Different hockey, bigger ice. I understand that. But man, oh man. Vasilevsky played there too. Shesterkin played there. Sorokin, like these young Russian goalies. He's part of that, you know, farm of Russian goaltending in that similar age bracket. And I'm not willing to give up on a guy like that yet because, I mean, look at what Jack Campbell is doing in Toronto right now. This guy was on a scrap heap, an 11th overall pick, and he could not make a save in the NHL. Let alone the AHL. Like, this guy was on the dumpster pile and completely rebuilt his career. And now he's a starter on one of the best teams in the league. I as begrudging as that is to say about the Maple Leafs, because I'm not a big fan of them. Look what he's doing. That guy's like a 29-year-old guy. Look at Tim Thomas. He had to go to freaking Finland to get anybody to notice him. Like, he didn't break the NHL till he was 32, 33. I'm not ready to give up on Samsonov, but this year we're talking about like the last couple good runs that Ovi and Nick and John Carlson have. It can't be these guys. They have proven that they are not ready. They just aren't ready.
Well, I mean, I guess that's pretty much all the notes I have for Caps World. I don't know. Are we ready? Are we ready to move down and go down on the farm?
100%. Let's do it.
All right, well, here we go, everybody. Let's go check out the Bears and the Stingrays. Let's go down on the farm. All All right, everybody, here we go. We're going down on the farm. We are talking Hershey Bears and South Carolina Stingrays. Now, I'm going to cover this one since Coach Dan isn't here. So, since our last show, the Hershey Bears were able to secure an OT winner on Saturday against the Bridgeport Islanders. Then on Sunday, they lost 2-3 against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms and suffered another loss this past Wednesday in a shootout against the Hartford Wolfpack. Currently, the Bears are third in the Atlantic Divisions, trailing both the Wolfpack and the Thunderbirds. Now, down in South Carolina in the ECHL, the Stingrays faced off against the Norfolk Admirals three times this past weekend, winning 2 out of 3 games. This weekend, the Stingrays are up against the Swamp Rats on Saturday, just one game this weekend, and currently the Stingrays are in last place in the South Division. So South Carolina Stingrays, they got some work to do. The Bears are in third. They got some work to do as well, but at least they're playing a little bit more. But I can't imagine the South Carolina Stingrays, Norfolk Admirals, they faced each other Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm sure some bad blood like built up there 3 days in a row against the same team. Good Lord.
That sounds like a junior schedule. The old 3-3 weekend swing. I mean, anytime you have that in any sport, you're going to start to be irritated by the guy on the other side of the bench. Like that's and hey, we've seen that. I mean, in the AHL this year and down in the E, grit grinders that are just holding on to a hockey career that are going to beat the crap out of anything that moves. I wouldn't want to play. I wouldn't want to play in the ECHL.
I've always wanted to go to an ECHL game. So hopefully, you know, I'll get down to South Carolina at some point. But that's it for what's going on down on the farm. Go Bears, go Stingrays. Now let's go around the NHL and beyond. All right, well, it's a big weekend going on around the NHL this weekend. It is the All-Star Game, so let's go over all the things happening right now around the NHL and beyond. The 2022 NHL All-Star Game will be held this Saturday and broadcasted here in the States on ABC and simulcasted on ESPN+ at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. The skills competition, which is my favorite part of the weekend, takes place on Friday at 7:30, and you can watch that on ESPN. Now, the NHL has announced that it will have its first ever outdoor All-Star Game skills competition events. The NHL Fountain Face-Off will be staged at the Fountains of the Bellagio, and the Las Vegas NHL 21-22 skills competition will shut down parts of Las Vegas Boulevard. The Fountain Face-Off will involve 8 participants traveling by boat to a rink in the fountain and shooting pucks as quickly as possible into 5 targets. The NHL 21 event will be blackjack-themed with players shooting pucks at an oversized deck of playing cards. Now, if it sounds like I'm smiling and laughing, it's because I completely am. These two events are freaking hysterical. I am so excited to see them boat out a bunch of hockey players to a rink in the fountain at the Bellagio. I mean, they are fully engulfed in this Las Vegas lifestyle of the NHL. I mean, I love it. I think this is great.
So... yeah, like going into this, like, to be honest, I didn't even know any of that because I avoid the All-Star Game. I just can't do it anymore. Like
Ovi, quote unquote, got COVID. That's why he can't.
Yeah.
Go
yeah. What a coincidence. I think that it says a lot when the league has to basically say, we'll suspend you if you don't show up.
Right.
To the quality of entertainment we're getting here. It's, you know, I don't know. I just think it's all just very vanilla and goofy. I don't know, you know, I don't know how to fix it, whether it's more cash for the players or something, or just, I don't even know. But, you know, it used to be a lot more prestigious. Like the All-Star Game felt like something that was exciting and guys just don't try anymore. They'd rather go to Florida and just like, you know, screw off for the weekend. They just don't care. Right. And like what I do I understand wanting to get them there. It's a corporate thing, and it's just never going to be baseball. Like, baseball has the best All-Star game. But
absolutely.
Baseball, but the baseball All-Star game still looks like baseball. Like, you know, this is a contact sport. Football's the same. Like, if not worse, like, who the hell watches the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, nobody does.
It's garbage. Like, I mean, it'd be cool to go, I guess, and, like, see the players. But, I mean, outside of that, like, I'm not turning my television on to watch the Pro Bowl. You know, it's lame. And, you know, when you have a contact sport and the All-Star game comes around and you can't really play the sport the same way that people are used to seeing it, what it is it's good for the kids. It's like, it's great for kids to go out and see these guys really flashing skills. The skills competition is still pretty fun. It's getting extra gimmicky this year, it sounds like. But hey, like, yeah. Vegas, it's Vegas, you know, that's showtime. So am I going to watch it? Nah. But it's great for the, you know, the kids. That's what it's really all about. But I don't know how to fix the NHL All-Star game. I will say that I think it's really lame that they suspend guys like Ovi.
Yeah.
And they did it to Nick Lidstrom 1 year, too. That's so embarrassing. You know, like, these guys, those two guys in particular, like, have given so much of their time to the All-Star. And as they get older and older, you know, all I tend to hear about is this great young talent in the NHL. And it's true. I love Trevor Zegras. He's so much fun to watch. Moritz Seider, all these guys. Well, if that's true, why do you have to pick on, like, these 36, 37 years? Remember the year that, like, people wanted Jágr to go? It's like,
oh yeah,
you know, come on. And, like, to suspend them, those guys that have already given enough of their time. I just think that's lame, you know? But it's good for the kids, and it's good for Brandon, so. I'm just joking.
No, I'm a kid at heart, and I find this hysterical. And
it is, know, hysterical.
Coach Dan and I are very different, because I look at this and go, this looks like it could be a train wreck. I got to tune in. Coach Dan's like, I'm not wasting my time. But I'm looking at it going, this is just too funny. I have to see what's going to happen. So it's going to be like a car wreck. And that's exactly what I'm tuning in for. I'll watch the skills competition. Absolutely. Will I watch the actual game? No, I'm not going to watch the game. But the skills competition, this looks like it's going to be hysterical. So the other stuff going on besides the outdoor events will be at the T-Mobile Arena, and you'll have the traditional fastest skater, save streak for goalies, hardest shot, accuracy shooting, and the return of the breakaway challenge. And the breakaway challenge is a trick shot competition, which participants get 2 shot attempts, and a panel of judges rate them from a scale of 1 to 10. All right, that one's a little weird. I'm not really excited about that one. But shooting at the Bellagio, that I'm all signed up for that. So that's really hysterical. Now let's get into stuff that is not really funny at all. It's kind of an embarrassment for the NHL and certain teams. So let's get into this. At a town hall on Wednesday, the Chicago Blackhawks owner Rocky Wirtz shut down questions about fallout surrounding the Kyle Beach lawsuit that has embroiled the organization for much of the past year. In a heated exchange during the panel, Rocky Wirtz made it clear he is not willing to revisit the past. He said, I think the report speaks for itself. The people that were involved are no longer here. We are not looking back at 2010. We're looking forward. We're not going to talk about 2010. So when pressed again to discuss the Blackhawks' plans to protect players in the future, Wirtz doubled down even further, saying, what we're going to do today is our business. I don't think it's any of your business, because I don't think it's your business. You don't work for the company. If someone in the company asks that question, we answer it. And I think you should get on to the next subject. We're not going to talk about Kyle Beach anymore. We're not going to talk about anything that happened. So obviously this threw up a firestorm amongst Blackhawk fans, around NHL fans. Pretty much anyone in general saw that online. They were kind of thrown back by it. So later that night, the team issued a statement of an apology from Rocky Wirtz, saying, tonight at the Blackhawks town hall, my response to 2 questions crossed the line. I want to apologize to the fans and to those reporters, and I regret that my response overshadowed the great work this organization is doing to move forward. We have the right leaders and the right processes in place to create a safe environment for your employees and players. So, I gotta say, if you have something like this ever pop up at your organization, and let's hope that never happens to anyone ever again, this is should be shown to everyone how not to handle a situation. This was absolutely mismanaged, mishandled. I'm sure this he knew these questions were going to come up. He doesn't want to answer them and refused to do so. Not the right call. 100% not the right call. This was just an absolutely cluster of a way to continually just show that you don't know what you're doing with this organization and how to protect your players, because this was in every which way the wrong way to handle this situation.
Yeah. I have some pretty pointed things that I would like to direct toward Rocky Wirtz. I'll be honest. We've all seen a lot of unfortunate things happen within the realm of sports. It's something that we all love. We all escape to. We all try and find entertainment in and friendships in. But sometimes real world happens to people like Kyle Beach, and his ability to forge a career in a league that he dreamed of playing in since he was a little kid was stolen from him by members of this organization, namely Brad Aldrich and the people who enabled him to continue operating within the employment parameters of that organization for the duration of 2010. Then they, it's come out in a story today from Rick Westhead, the guy up here in Canada that broke this thing wide open alongside guys like Mark Lazarus and Scott Powers of The Athletic in Chicago, that three more plaintiffs have come forward and they are weighing potentially putting forward a class action lawsuit against the Blackhawks, including somebody that was at Miami University High School, where it's now been learned that the Chicago Blackhawks heavily recommended Brad Aldrich go when he left the organization and was allowed to leave under the guise of his own volition for personal reasons. And he assaulted, allegedly, this new person, John Doe 3, and two other people have come forward now as well as part of this potential lawsuit. We know who Kyle Beach is because Kyle Beach wanted us to know who he is. And he's braver than anybody involved with this organization and, frankly, this league currently than anybody I've maybe ever seen. And, you know, I started this by saying we've all seen unfortunate things happen in the sports world. I'll be honest, man. And I don't know if you guys saw it in the States. I'm sure they did run it on NHL Network. I know they did, actually, because Jackie Redman talked about it with Mike Rupp and the panel. I watched live the interview that Kyle did with Rick Westhead here on TSN. I watched it live, and that was the worst. That was just the worst. Like, I get emotional about it now. It was just like probably the worst thing I've ever seen an athlete, you know, address. It, like, that was so painful. That was a really painful half hour of television. And to I'm not willing to give this organization any credit, you know, for anything. If they're doing such great work, share it with us. Why are you hiding behind 5-year-old temper tantrums, you know, that you'd scold your kid for having? If you're doing such great work, where is it? Why will you not address this young man? You should be talking about Kyle Beach every year to everybody in the organization. You should be using this as an example of something that should never, ever happen and explain to everybody how it happened and what you're doing to ensure that it will never happen again. When Wayne Gretzky, one of the most bland, vanilla athletes of all time, who really doesn't say much. And that's not a disrespect. That's just who Wayne is. He's a very chill guy. When Wayne Gretzky will go on TV and say, I would be concerned if my 18-year-old son was drafted there. I would want to know he's going to be protected. Wayne Gretzky said that. The face of the sport. That's damning. And when you sit there, and this is your responsibility, Rocky, whether you knew to the letter what had happened or not, this is your organization. And for you to sit at a town hall where generally teams try and connect with their fan base, for you to tell us, all of us, like, let's be honest, this was not him saying this to Mark Lazarus and the other media members there. He was saying this to all of us when he said, it's none of your business. When you say that, that I can't imagine how Kyle Beach must feel, because it is our business. We pay for this. And to say that to your season ticket holders and the fans of your organization and other young men and women who have been sexually assaulted that are hockey fans or fans of sport that hold these organizations to such high value and multitude of whatever you want to call it, professionalism, which is a word I would never associate with this team. That is so hurtful, man. And what I would say to Rocky Wirtz is you should resign. It's embarrassing that Gary Bettman and Bill Daly have not made a statement about this. It's embarrassing that the two of them have not marched him out of the league. It's embarrassing that they're not giving this guy the Donald Sterling treatment, where the NBA, Gary's former organization, essentially sat down and said, you're out. It's embarrassing that that hasn't happened yet. And every day that this guy is allowed to continue running this organization is a stain on the legacy of this league, this sport, and that city, and Kyle Beach's life. And that's what's really important here. And I think Rocky Wirtz is a cowardly, gutless pig. And he should. And if he had any integrity, which I doubt, he should sell this team tomorrow. And that's all I have to say about that.
The really weird thing about that town hall was somebody else that was on the stage with Rocky tried to interject.
That was his son. That was his son. That was his son, Danny Wirtz.
Oh.
And he stiff-armed him. He gave him the Heisman.
Yeah, and was like, no, I'm going to finish saying what I got to say.
And, of course, there he is out there with Jamie Faulkner, the brilliant young woman that they hired. Of course, they had to march her out there, too. Yeah. And she was, based other than Danny, was the only one that had any sense of whatever it was they were saying, any sensibility in their comments. That was embarrassing.
I think Danny went to the reporters that Rocky told off and was like, if you ever want to talk about this, let me know. And I will have no problem giving you a statement about what we're doing. So
a shred of leadership. Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully some things change in the near future. But the way that Rocky Wirtz handled this is exactly how not to handle this type of situation. This is, like you said, this isn't a sport right now. This is real life issues that are going on. And, you know, teams do have to protect their young players. Like you said, these guys are drafted. They're 18 years old. They're young adults at that point. They're going to still need some help, you know, at that point in their lives, professionally and personally. So hopefully the Blackhawks and Rocky Wirtz can figure out what to do next, because what the plan they have right now is not working.
Yeah, I agree, and I just think that he, like for me personally, and I know for a lot of fans down there, there are reports coming out of Chicago in The Athletic that a lot of season ticket holders, first of all, already canceled plans, and after last night, even more canceled. I don't know if you saw the crowd in Chicago last night, but you know, you look back 10 years ago at, you know, 2010 when they started to make their rise, and, you know, 15 and all that. How full the United Center was. There wasn't a funner barn in the NHL. There were not a lot of people there last night against Minnesota, and this is part of it. And I just, for me personally, and I know a lot of the people down there in Chicago, this guy shot his last bullet. Like, I'm done. I am so done with this guy and this franchise. You know, I just don't, you know, it must be tough to be a Blackhawks fan to have enjoyed all that winning and have this weigh on you. And I know some people don't care. I know some people just frankly don't care. Yeah. What I would say to those people is, if Kyle Beach was your son or your brother or your dad, your uncle, your best friend, how would you feel then? So it's so easy to be unempathetic in this world. I have absolutely no use for that man and that franchise as it sits. And that's their fault. That's their fault and solely their fault.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It really is. Now, switching gears here, we're done going around the NHL. Let's talk a little bit about what is going on in Beijing. The Olympics have officially started. Team USA's women's hockey team defeated Finland 5-2, and Team Canada's women's hockey team defeated Switzerland 12-1. That's how you make a statement starting this tournament. Good Lord, 12-1. Jeez. Unfortunately, there were some injuries in both games. Team USA lost assistant captain Brianna Decker after a leg injury that will actually take her out of the rest of the tournament. Team Canada lost Melody Doust, a key part of Canada's second line that combined for 3 goals in the first period. She did leave the game, did not return following an awkward hit into the boards during the second period, but I believe you said that she's expected to be able to play later on down the road. This isn't going to be it for her for Beijing.
I did read some reports that they're hopeful that maybe she misses the preliminary round and can come back. I hope so, because Melody Doust is an incredible player, really great skater, and like you said, extremely effective member of that second line. I think on a lot of teams she'd be on the first line, but Canada is that deep. But she's a key player, and I mean, on the U.S. side of things, you know, to lose Brianna Decker, like, I mean, you know, try and find me a better female hockey player right now. She's one of the best in the world, and just a crushing injury for them. I hope she's all right, and that the you know, this injury doesn't affect the longevity of her career, because like that looked like a really nasty injury.
It did, and just hearing her screams in that empty arena, I mean, yeah, that was horrifying to see. So
never want to see that stuff.
No. No. So coming up, Team USA will be up against the Russian Olympic athletes on February 5th, up against Switzerland on the 6th, and then it's USA versus Canada on the 7th, and you can watch it here in the States on Peacock. So that is pretty much it for what's going on around the NHL and beyond. Ryan, man, thank you so much for joining me today. Let me know, where can people tweet to you, talk to you? Where can they follow you? I know you have a couple podcasts, and you're a working man in the OHL. So let everybody know where they can check you out.
So the show I host now, Instigating with Clarkie and Drury, that's myself and Chris Clark, a longtime Maple Leaf TV executive with the Toronto Maple Leafs and former producer at Sportsnet Fan 590. We are on Twitter at Instigating Pod. We're on Facebook as well. You can find us on all the best podcast apps and on YouTube as well. You can follow me at CKNX_Drury. That's, you know, my professional work account, if you will, up here on CKNX Radio in Canada. And of course, if you're so inclined to watch some of the next wave of NHL talent in the Ontario Hockey League, you can watch the OHL, including my Guelph Storm, on CHL TV. You can download the app and you can subscribe. I know they have a deal on right now for the rest of the season, trying to entice people to watch and buy in, because obviously there haven't been many fans in arenas up here. So if you're interested in watching the best junior hockey league in the world, and that's the truth, check out CHL TV.
Is there anybody right now of the games that you've called that you're seeing and you're like, oh yeah, this guy's going to definitely make a splash in the NHL like tomorrow?
Well, I mean, obviously the consensus guy who's still number one is Shane Wright. of the Kingston Frontenac. And we haven't seen Shane because just given the COVID restrictions up here, the OHL has divided the conferences. So the West is only playing the West. The East is only playing the East. But Shane Wright is going to walk right onto an NHL squad. I think that a guy that was drafted in last year's NHL draft, Brennan Othman of the New York Rangers, I think the Rangers are thrilled that they got this guy at 15. He just hit 30 goals. He's the first OHLer to hit 30 goals on the season. Scored it last night of the Flint Firebirds down in the States, up there in Michigan. He is going to be a really dangerous scorer. I look at a guy like Luke Evangelista, who should have made Team Canada, in my opinion, and he's just been lighting up the OHL scoreboard out of frustration, I think, of the London Knights. A Nashville pick. He is going to be a great player as well. And hey, you know, the Guelph Storm, they've got some really good draft eligible players for this year's draft. Funnily enough, right around that range where the Capitals might be drafting. So okay. maybe they land themselves a Matthew Poitras, who I've been so impressed with in terms of his two-way game and his smarts out there. And a young man who is of Russian descent but was born here in Canada, Danny Zhilkin of the Guelph Storm as well. Rated around 26-27 right now. He could potentially be a guy within the Caps wheelhouse as well, depending on how things fall. I'm really impressed with his offensive skill and his playmaking ability. So there is no shortage of talent in the three leagues up here. I'm obviously fixated on the Ontario Hockey League, but the Western League and the Quebec League, there's always great talent coming out of there. It's going to be a great NHL draft again.
Well, awesome. Very cool stuff. Now, if you want to follow me, ask me about all kinds of things, Caps, all you got to do is tweet to me. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. If you enjoyed the show, go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/whatthepuckpod. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know. Plus, you can subscribe and listen to the podcast directly on our Facebook page. I love that feature. I think that's so cool. Now, we do the show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us an Apple Podcast review, rate us on Spotify, like us over on Facebook, and then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat and Twitch and TikTok, anywhere you're social on the web or with your phone. Say, I'm a Washington Capitals fan. I listen to What the Puck, and you should too. Also, if you're over on the Reddit page for the Capitals and you see that one guy bashing our show, don't listen to him. Just enjoy our show. What are you complaining about? It's free. All right. So anyway, let's look at the Caps schedule. And due to the All-Star break, we will be back after only one Caps game. So on February 8th, the Capitals are up against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That game is at 7 o'clock, and you can watch that locally on NBC Sports Washington. So Ryan, man, thank you so much for joining me this week, tagging in for Dan. It's been awesome to catch up with you again, hear your Canadian outlook on this team and your hockey smarts on the show. You know, we don't have a lot of that with Coach Dan and I, but thank you so much. I've really enjoyed you being on the show.
Dude, it's always a pleasure. I love being on the show. I love listening to the show. You and Dan are great. Like I said, man, anytime you guys need a grumpy Canadian to join you, I am. I will make time available for you lads.
We really appreciate it. I know I appreciate it. Everybody with me, say it loud, say it proud.
Let's go.
Go, Caps.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.